my wheelhouse, my favorite people, and I always try to say this if I can in podcasts, I love working with sexual abuse survivors because not only do they get rid of beliefs like I'm damaged goods or I'm worthless or I'm powerless, but one of the implications of all work that I find fascinating and powerful is all of our emotions come from the meaning we give events. Events have no inherent meaning. We don't know anything for sure because something happened.
Welcome to Do It With Dan,
entrepreneurial philanthropist, public speaker and author, creator of the Beyond Intention Paradigm. Here is your host, Daniel Mangena.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Do It With Dan podcast. I'm your host, Dan Mangena, joined by quite a delightful, delicious little sprightly thing that I got to meet in my first meeting with the Transformation Leadership Council back in January. I was but a guest then. But we had lunch a couple of times. She's absolutely awesome. But she shared with me a bit about a magical process, quite magical process, that she and her late husband have been sharing with the world for some 30 years that's dissolving, disseminating, and disrupting limiting beliefs. I'm looking forward to learning more about it. As you guys know, I do my best not to do any research on anyone. This is a genuine experience of curiosity for me. And so I've actually been really edging to get this this podcast done so that I can go and do a bit more of the work, because I'm interested to see how it's going to work for me in my life and perhaps some of the people that we work with. Excited to share Shelley with you. I'm going to stop waffling. Shelley, why don't you let the audience know who you are and what it is you do in the world?
Okay. I'm Shelley Lefko, and I fell in love with Dan the minute I met him. There was just this heart connection that was, you know, very deep. So 30 years ago, my husband was on what he called, my late husband, a spiritual intellectual journey to discover why he and the rest of the world did things they know weren't good going in. You know, people go into relationships with people they know they shouldn't. They, oh God, I know this is not going to work, but they do it anyway. So what is it that has us not do things we know we should do? So everybody knows now, you should, if you eat healthily and you exercise, you'll be more vibrant, you'll live longer, and they don't do it. People know that they shouldn't yell at their kids, and they read parenting books and they still yell at their kids. So we do things we know we shouldn't do, and we don't do things we know we should do. And Morty was looking at why everything that looked like it was going to turn out didn't turn out. And he was on a plane going to California, and he started journaling. And at the end of the trip, he had, he says, downloaded. He created a process that was based on the premise. And 30 years ago, Dan, people used to say to me when I said, I help people eliminate beliefs, they'd say, beliefs? You mean like religious beliefs? Nobody knew what I was talking about. Now, everybody knows that you can't make change without eliminating beliefs. But back then, no one knew. So he was, it was interesting because he was going to pitch somebody who was being funded by the state of California to get people off welfare. And they were hiring, they were looking for a motivational speaker. So Morty got off the plane and he came up with the idea that people's lives, behavior, emotions, and reality are consistent with their mostly unconscious beliefs about themselves, life, people, and the world. And he came up with this way to get rid of beliefs. And it's not airy-fairy, and it's not woo-woo. It's very logical and basic, and it works. Mm-hmm. So he went to the pitch, and he did the process on the people. And they hired him on the spot. Wow. And he came home, and he said to me, Shelley, you have to see what came through me. Mm-hmm. And he's very modest, was very modest. And he had somebody, a friend of ours, who kept saying, I want to get married again and I want a relationship. And she kept not having one. And he looked at her and he said, so what do you think you believe? And she said, well, I don't know. And he says, well, finish this sentence, marriages. And she goes, oh, marriage is suffocating and you have to give up who you are to be married. And then he said, what about men? And oh, men are selfish and men. And he started getting all these beliefs. And so he picked one. And he did the process on her. It makes me cry. Daniel, I watched him do this and I went, that's why I am on this planet. It almost knocked me off. It was the most spiritual, I think, moment for me where spirit just said, this is it, baby. This is why you're here. And I kind of breathed it in and it was mine. I mean, it was my process. And we've since, you know, we train people, we have a program. I'm going to offer a free thing to your listeners to eliminate a belief for free. So we have, you know, products and services and trainings and all kinds of things now. And that's who I am and how I started this.
Wow.
And it's miraculous.
I mean, the listeners will not be, they will not be, ignorant to the fact that I'm big on the fact that, but I'm all in with him that what we do in the world is a direct product of what we believe, because we're running on unconscious programs so much of the time and we're just so unaware of what those programs are. And so I'm really excited to dive a bit deeper into what your process is and how it works to support people, because I think people having the opportunity to have a tangible process with an experienced, skilled guide to take them through that process, where they can start to create point to point, this is what I'd like to create, and this is me doing the things that are going to lead to it, is really powerful. And I think it does move through a lot of the magical thinking that stops people, I think, getting to goals that they want to achieve in their life. And so I'm excited to learn more. So he comes home, it's like, takes you through the thing, and, oh my God, this is my purpose, this is what I'm here to do. And now you've got all these things going on. So over the decades, you must have seen some really interesting stories of people thinking that their belief wasn't going to shift, and then maybe be like, oh my God, like the belief is God. What are some funny stories or interesting stories that you can share about people really saying, oh, I'm never going to change, and then just seeing the change happen for themselves?
Oh my God. Every day. Every day, yeah. People are skeptical because a lot of people talk about getting rid of beliefs, mm-hmm. and because they know it's, people have brilliant work, mm-hmm. and they will tell you, you know, Jack talks about the success principles, and they're brilliant, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. but if you have beliefs in the way, you're not going to use them.
Exactly.
And mm-hmm. I want to clarify something, because I love what you said about magical thinking. A belief is a statement about reality that you hold as the truth. That's what a belief is, right? Mm-hmm. Nobody cares about eliminating beliefs. They care about eliminating patterns. So the difference between a pattern and a belief is a pattern is observable. So I can see you procrastinate. I can see you have crappy relationships. I can see you not stand up for yourself. Mm-hmm. I can see you stay in relationships where you're mistreated. I can see you be afraid to do certain things. You know, you could watch somebody's like afraid. I can see you have approach anxiety in the dating world. So patterns are what you want to change. And there's behavioral patterns, which I said things you want to do and don't, or don't want to do and do. Then there's emotional patterns. I feel anxious. I feel depressed. I feel embarrassed all the time. So those are emotional patterns. And then there's reality patterns, which is I do everything right and nothing turns out for me. So those are the life is hard patterns. Mm-hmm. So a story that's funny. Oh my goodness. Well, I don't know about funny, but things that I find fascinating. So people have this idea Dan. If you really loved me, you would. Or if you really cared about me, you wouldn't. And I had a man call, and well, let's start with workaholism. I was going to go someplace else, but I was going to go into cheating. You know, I had a guy call me. He was a big deal. I can't say too much, but he was a very big deal, very, very successful. And he said, "Shelley, I'm cheating on my wife. I love my wife. I don't want to cheat." Mm-hmm. And he had the belief, "I'm not lovable." So mm-hmm. his mother pushed him away and, you know, was very unloving. And what makes me lovable is being wanted by a woman, which I think was Bill Clinton's belief, right? Mm. His mother was not around and all that. So when a woman wants him, he feels lovable. He feels worthwhile. He feels good enough. And so that was the belief that ran him. I had a client who called me and he said, "Shelley, I need help." I said, "What's your problem?" He says, "I keep promising my kids that I'm going to come to their performances and their games, and I'm going to come home for dinner, and I never make it." And I said, "Oh," he said, "and he owned a huge insurance company, a big company, I can't remember. Mm-hmm. He said, "I'm on the cover of business publications. I'm worth $10 million. When is it going to be enough?" And the workaholism beliefs are, "I'm not good enough. Mm-hmm. I'm not important." So now we have a beach ball. "I'm not good enough." This is why affirmations drive me crazy. "I'm not good enough." You stand in front of a mirror. "I'm good enough. I'm good enough. I'm good enough. I'm good enough." You can't put something where there already is something. So we have to get rid of this
in order to imprint something new.
Before we could create something new, exactly. So I'm not now. Now I have a beach ball, right? That's my belief. Now I have what we call a survival strategy. So I'm a kid. I'm criticized by my parents. I conclude I'm not good enough. Now I get acknowledged for scoring a goal, or I get acknowledged for getting an A. Now I feel good enough for 5 minutes. So what makes me good enough is achieving things. So now I have to keep doing that to keep this beach ball called "I'm not good enough" underwater. Do you ever try holding a beach ball underwater? It keeps coming up, right? So we have to get rid of the belief what makes you good enough is achieving things. If you're the oldest of 10, you might have the belief what makes me good enough. Every time I get somebody who's the oldest of 10, I say, "Are you a nurse?" And they say, "How did you know?"
Because you feel you're good enough by helping others.
Exactly. Yes, exactly. Very good. So we have survival strategy beliefs that are driven. They're not a choice. You know, it's great to be a choice. I want to be successful. It's a game. It's fun. It's like, yeah, that would be all things considered. Why not? But it no longer, I had the belief, my survival strategy was, what makes me good enough is having other people think well of me. My mother was only happy if I was invited, included, and, you know, people loved me. You know, she thought that would make me happy. So I had the belief what makes me good enough is having other people think well of me. And every time I walked away from somebody, I would say, "Did I say the right thing? Did I wear the right thing? Did they like me? You know, did I, you know?" And now it's like when we were at lunch and we were having that conversation about race and it got like edgy, I'm in there, you know, because I'm being my authentic self now. If I speak in, you know, I spoke in Croatia in front of 600 people, you know, not everybody's cup of tea. Not everybody's going to love me. And that's okay now. And it's not that I don't care, right? It isn't. But it no longer.
You're no longer controlled by the limiting belief. By the survival pattern, sorry. The survival behavior.
Survival strategy.
Yeah. So that's the one. So it's about no longer being controlled by the survival strategy, But the survival strategy, it sounds like it's an unconscious auto response based on the belief that's underneath. And based on the pace that the brain works, 10,000 to 10 million times the speed of the conscious mind, we're never going to be able to stop the strategy playing out. And that's why we have these unconscious behaviors that end up ruining our life. Like the chap who wanted to stop cheating on his wife, he's probably going in there before he gets his Johnny Cochrane out and says, you know, I'm not supposed to be doing this. But the pull, the urge overrides him because it's that reptilian part of the brain.
Our beliefs always win out. So there's two things. At the end of our process, we do something that's very kind of spiritual and magical, but we get people to see you create your beliefs. They didn't exist before you created them, but your beliefs create your life. So we put people in an altered state of having this experience of themselves that they are not this creation, this thing called Shelley or Dan. They, who they really are, is God consciousness. Who they really are is the creator of their beliefs. And that's very cool.
Awesome. So awesome. So it sounds like there are some regularly linked behaviors that you can link to certain survival strategies, that you can link to at least groups of beliefs by the, but is that just based on experience, or does do these things logically follow across?
The only, that's a great question. I love that. So A, they logically go across. I can tell you the five most common beliefs there are. However, before I do that, the only pattern that has the same beliefs for everyone, we used to have it as a niche. So I guarantee in four sessions, I will get rid of your fear of public speaking. I got so bored doing the same beliefs over and over again. I stopped doing the, I mean, I'll do it. You know, if somebody calls me, I will do it, but it's no longer a niche.
It's not the thing that you go
it's
to do.
The same beliefs. My wheelhouse, my favorite people, and I always try to say this if I can in podcasts, I love working with sexual abuse survivors because not only do they get rid of beliefs like I'm damaged goods or I'm worthless or I'm powerless, but one of the implications of our work that I find fascinating and powerful is all of our emotions come from the meaning we give events. Events have no inherent meaning. We don't know anything for sure because something happens. My husband died. That was devastating. I miss him. I loved him. He was the most gorgeous human being that ever walked the earth. But the fact that he died does not mean I'll be alone for the rest of my life. I'm never going to be happy again. I'm never going to have sex again. It doesn't have inherent meaning. We don't know anything for sure because something happens. So the meaning we give events mostly comes from our beliefs. So when we get rid of beliefs, not only do possibilities exist, but you stop giving meaning that causes all your suffering.
So there's like, when people say like resistance is a source of suffering, paranoia is a source of suffering, because we start adding all this stuff on it, because I think it's the law of relativity. Everything just is until you start to give meaning to it.
Yes.
And so when we have this freedom then, from this survival strategy driven association of meaning from experience, then it opens up the realm to, okay, what meaning do I want to attach to this? What do I want to focus on? Where do I want to direct my energy in the face of this experience?
Or give it no meaning and look at, so when I didn't want to get out of bed, I'd say, what happened? So this is a process that I can't teach you in a session in this, how to get, how to eliminate beliefs. I will give you an opportunity to do that later. However, I can give you a little tool to practice. So I was once on a very big podcast, Mark Hyman's podcast, 25 million downloads. he's my friend. We get on. He shared about his sessions with me so privately, I was blown away. Mm-hmm. It could not have been a more powerful podcast. At the end, I'm just about to go into a course where we teach how to get rid of, how to dissolve meaning. And he texts me and he says, "Shell, I think I lost the podcast. I think it didn't record." Now, I start to go down the tubes, right? Mm-hmm. So anytime you have a negative emotion, stop. Ask yourself, what just happened? Mm-hmm. Mark said he lost the podcast. What meaning are you giving it? We'll never do it that, it'll never be that good again. This is terrible. What's another possible meaning? Could be it's going to be better next time. And it could mean that he is going to find it. But the fact that he just told me that has no inherent meaning. I don't know anything for sure other than what happened. Hmm. So the emotion goes away now, because the minute the meaning is dissolved, the emotion goes away. Now I go into the course and I'm teaching how to dissolve meaning. Of course, I share the story. And 5 minutes before the end, he texts me and he says, "It's all good. We have it."
Mm. And if we go into the manifestation side of things, your ability to connect at a frequency level to the outcome of it still being there could only have been available if it was still a possibility. If you went down the rabbit hole and were like, "Oh my God, it's lost and everything's gone to pants," you're not going to be available to even connect with that outcome of him being able to find it.
Brilliant. And the thing that's so profound about this is you are never again a victim. Because once you, so the way my husband did this, and there's a TEDx talk he did called How to Stop Suffering. So if you get the meaning is in my mind, the meaning is not inherent in the event. Mm-hmm. For some people, that's all you have to get. Wait mm-hmm. a minute, the meaning's not in the event, the meaning's in my head. Mm-hmm. So when you get rid of, I'm going to go back to the five most common beliefs that people have. Mm-hmm. So we come into this world, Dan, and you have a two-year-old. So this is a perfect conversation. You come into this world, you don't know if you're good enough or not good enough. You don't know if you're important or not important. You don't know if life is hard or easy, right? Mm-hmm. You don't know anything. You don't know about money. Mm-hmm. And you show up in this little environment called your family. Mm-hmm. And whatever dynamic it looks like, mom and dad and dad, mom and mom, one parent, whatever it is, mm-hmm. that's your reality. So if parents criticize you, so what's the one word, well, your child is too young, but what, you know what the one word question every little child asks all day long?
What's that? Why?
Why? Exactly.
Yeah.
Why? Why am I getting, why can't I live up to my parents' expectations? Mm-hmm. Oh, I see. I'm not good enough. Mm-hmm. Why are mommy and daddy struggling with money? Oh, I see. Money is scarce and hard to get. Mm-hmm. So that's how our beliefs get formed, right? Mm-hmm. Now, here's why they stay with us mm-hmm. throughout our entire lives, despite evidence. I've worked with 5 Harvard PhDs who had the belief, "I'm stupid."
What?
We know then that they knew they weren't. I said to one of them, this was a long, long, long time ago, the first one, Morty and I, we started doing this in corporations. That's where we started.
Yeah.
So I said, where did the belief, you know, I said to him, "Don't you have a PhD from Harvard?" When he said, "I'm stupid." And I said, and he goes, "Oh, yeah. I conned my way through Harvard." That's the power.
So the survival strategy literally creates these little narratives to make the beliefs.
It's not survival strategy, it's beliefs. Yeah. Say beliefs. Survival strategies are a certain kind of beliefs. But yes, it's our beliefs that have us not literally, Dan, not able to see evidence to the contrary. You see it, but it doesn't equate. So when I said, and here's why. We think, and this is not going to make sense until you actually do the process, we think we see our beliefs in the world. So when I say to people every day, every week, every month, in every country, I have clients in Uganda, in every country around the world, Syria, I have a client in Syria now. Doesn't it seem like you saw whatever the belief is? I'm not good enough. Well, I did see that. This client I worked with this morning that we were talking about earlier, she was homeless as a kid and didn't feel safe. And she said, if I don't take care of myself, no one else will. And I had a very hard time getting her to get that she never saw that. She saw as a child, she had to take care of herself, but she never saw. See, look, anything you could see has a color, shape, and location.
Yeah.
You cannot see a belief. That's why I said you can see a pattern.
I got you now because it's an idea. It's not something that's tangible and real.
Exactly. It's a concept. It's an idea. So if you walk past me and don't say hello, people might say, see, I told you he didn't like me. Mm-hmm. And it's as if you can see he doesn't like me. You can't see he doesn't like me.
You see the pattern, or you see the activity, and then your belief attaches meaning to it, which reinforces the belief and then keeps it spinning.
Yes, yes, that's accurate. And you think you see. See, it is impossible to not believe something you think you saw. So if somebody said to you, Shelly has blonde hair, you'd say, no, she doesn't. She's a redhead. And they'd say, no, she has blonde hair. You'd say, no, I was with her an hour ago. She's a redhead.
Yeah.
Right? And it's the same thing when you say to people, doesn't it feel like you saw? I'm not important. They say, and that's why I talked to you about your son. I'm not important comes from parents not paying attention to their kids. So if you're sitting and going like this while your kid is talking to you, they think they see I'm not important. No, they're seeing you on the phone. Mm. Or they're seeing your absence. Mm-hmm. But you can't see money is scarce and hard to get. I'll never get what I want. Just like this woman, she kept saying, I saw, if I don't take care of myself, no one else will. And her life reflects that belief. She is constantly being disappointed by people. She always has to take care of herself. She can't trust anybody to take care of her. Mm. So when I got her to see, you can't see into the you can't see into the future. You can see what happened, but you can't see what's going to happen.
And the belief starts to predict what's going to happen, and then that's what drives the emotion. Oh, this is going to happen, and we run through the whole scenario, and then we bring that pain into the present moment.
And when you get rid of beliefs, you know, I have the great honor and privilege of working with a woman who was sex trafficked. She was at a very vulnerable place in her life, and this woman accosted her in a parking lot at a mall. And for 3 years, that was her life. And she had PTSD. She couldn't walk out. She couldn't trust people. She had beliefs about everything that you can imagine. And she was suicidal. And she's, you know, a young woman. And, you know, we didn't even have 20 sessions together. I mean, we had a package of 10, which is what I usually do. And then, you know, another package. And by the time that, you know, she called me and she said, I just want to, I don't know that we're going to get to beliefs today because I want to tell you what happened. And this happened and that happened. And I have this guy. And she had nothing that was having her want to live. And now all of a sudden she's like, and I have these dreams and I'm going to be a photojournalist and I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. And this guy has been following me and I had lunch with him. I'll tell you the truth. I was sobbing. I mean, I don't do that in sessions, but this one, because when people get rid of beliefs, possibilities open up that weren't there before.
I'm a big proponent of, so one of the things I always say is the mind is the gatekeeper to experience. Because much to your point, if my mind doesn't accept something as possible, I'm not going to see it. It doesn't matter what I've written in my journal, what's on my vision board, what, you know, I've been thinking. If that beach ball is there, it's, I'm not going to be able to see it. And having this roadmap to curating a mind that matches to outcomes by freeing you up to possibility, I think is a really, really powerful gift that you bring into the world.
I love what you just said. I had a friend, very close friend, whose father was a violent alcoholic, used to beat her mother. So one day we're in Fire Island and I have a session with her and we get rid of beliefs about men mostly and relationships. Because she used to say to her mother, why do you stay with him? And she'd say, because I love him. So she had the belief love was stupid, dangerous, and something. I can't remember the third thing. Okay. So we're in Fire Island. We get rid of a whole bunch of beliefs. And the next night, I'm telling a story about how when I met my husband, we started going out and something happened and he asked for this commitment and it was this whole thing. And, you know, I love you because I create loving you. It was a very magical story. So I tell the story and she's sitting there and she says to me, I heard you tell, this is the third time I heard you tell that story. She said, it was the first time I ever heard it. I heard words, I heard the story, but I couldn't hear it. Now I hear it. What a beautiful story. Because given her beliefs, no man could say to a woman and mean it what my husband said to me and what happened in the relationship. It wasn't a possibility. So it was exactly what you said. She literally could not hear the story.
So for someone who's, for example, been working on a big goal, they've been following some kind of principle or some roadmap. They've been doing the high performance habits, you know, they're getting up and they're doing the work. They're doing the affirmations every day and they're not seeing a shift.
Yeah.
There's a high probability then that there is something, there's a beach ball that's bouncing in the way and stopping them seeing the outcome in their life.
High probability. I would say there's almost always a belief in the way, because here's the thing. I'm going to tell you, because this is important. Here are the five most common beliefs that everyone has. And then I'll address what you just said, because it's accurate. Why a belief is always in the way. If you're stuck and you don't know how to do something, but you have the belief that that mistakes and failures are learning opportunities, you're not going to be afraid to try different things, right? So it's not the circumstances. It's the beliefs that you have that determine how you handle it. So I'm not good enough is the number one belief that everybody has pretty much. I'm not important. Mistakes and failures are bad. So when people say to me, oh, I know, I don't have that belief. I know mistakes. And I'm going to show you how you know if you have a belief in a minute. I don't have the belief mistakes and failures are bad. I read every business book and I know blah, 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 blah. I could have written a book with every quote about why Michael Jordan, blah, 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 blah. It doesn't matter. Yeah. I still, as long as I had that belief, Dan, I couldn't do it. I stayed small because I was so terrified to make mistakes and fail. Because when we're kids, we get yelled at for mistakes. When we go to school, we get yelled at for mistakes. That's why the educational system is toxic and terrible. They're training you to go work in a factory, not in today's world. So mistakes and failures are bad. If I make a mistake or fail, I'll be rejected. And what makes me good enough is having other people think well of me. And if you think you don't have that belief, first of all, people throw their children under the bus because they're worried about what strangers in a store are going to think of them that they'll never see again. They'll scream at their kid, don't touch that, or stop running around, or get over here. Because they're worried about what people are going to think of them, right? So those are the five most common beliefs that people have. And if you're worried about what people are going to think of you, you can't be all, you can't be your authentic self. If you're, and by the way, fear of public speaking, those are mostly the beliefs. There's a few others. What I have to say is not important. People aren't interested in what I have to say. And then what makes me good enough are my achievements. Because now I'm a human doing, I'm not a human being. And I tell people, when my husband died, there were 100 people, it was a kind of a last minute thing, and 100 people, somebody flew in from England just to be there to acknowledge him. And what they said, the first 50, and then I stopped it, he was the most loving man they had ever met. He was present. Two people said they knew him 40 years. One was a TLC person. They knew him 40 years, and they never heard him say a bad word about anybody. My daughter, my Hawaii daughter, said, I'm going to tell you a great story. I not only knew I was loved unconditionally every day of my life by my father, but to never feel judged. That's a legacy. That's a legacy to leave. Nobody talked about the process he created, the books he wrote. He went to University of Chicago. Nobody gives a shit. Really, nobody does. It's not even, maybe it's interesting what you do. You know, but it's like if you said to me, Shelley, I go to Dubai and I go here and I go there and I do this and I do that. It's like, that's really interesting, but I want to know you. I want to know who you are. What do you care about? What's important to you? What turns you on? What challenges you? What lights you up? That's what I want to know.
I think it's really, really, really potent. The piece about feeling unjudged and fully loved completely and unconditionally. Because as humans, you know, we can keep up a facade of something, but we're always going to revert back to the default of who we are. The fact that there was that track record of experience means that we're dealing with the person. But my question is, do you feel that the work that he did allowed him to be that person? Or the person that he was allowed him to be, do the work that he did?
Great question. Both. He had a horrible childhood and he didn't want to live his life at the effect of it. Because as I tell my sexual abuse, incest, rape, molestation survivors, what happened to you has no impact on your life after it happens. What has an impact is what you conclude about it. That runs your, defines your life.
And you said you were going to say, share a way that we can see what beliefs that we've got.
Yeah. So whenever you feel stuck, and you alluded to this, Dan, in your brilliance, you are so smart and such a joy to be with, my goodness. So let's assume you procrastinate, and that's a big problem for people. Right before you procrastinate, right before you put something off, right before you go to do something and you go, nah, and you start looking at Facebook or wherever you go now, that idiot site. not Twitter, the other one.
TikTok,
thank you.
Yeah.
Go to TikTok, right, and watch some inane nonsense. What thoughts and feelings do you have when you think about doing it? So the next time you procrastinate and you say, oh, I'll do it later, stop and ask yourself, if I did it now, what's the feeling I have? Well, the feeling is anxiety. What's the anxiety? Then there's a what if. What if I make a mistake? Now, if you're afraid to make a mistake or fail, you have the belief mistakes and failures are bad. Ooh. If you get rid of that belief, you won't be afraid to fail anymore. So if you want to approach a woman and stop and ask yourself, and you feel fear, mm-hmm. obviously. So underlying fear, and this is a whole nother conversation for another podcast. Underlying fear is always a real or imagined threat to your survival. You take away the threat to your survival, fear goes away.
Because they say that we're only born with two fears, falling and loud noises. They're the only two that we're born with, and everything else develops from over time.
And we have a little process that's called the emotional processes. And that could decondition a stimulus fear that you are taught, which I'll show you in a second. Guess what's under, because everybody has all this nonsense about what I'm saying, and I'm telling you what I'm saying makes sense because it's logical. What do you think is under anger? What underlies anger?
Frustration?
It's interesting. Everybody, frustration is mild. Well, frustration is anger. Mm-hmm. So, but everybody usually says fear. Mm-hmm. No, underlying anger is powerlessness. Because if you could do something about it,
you wouldn't
get angry.
Yeah.
You would just be efficacious. You would do something about it. We get angry because we feel powerless. That's why we get angry with our kids, because we feel powerless. We can't get them to do what they want. I can't get my boss to treat me nicely. I can't get my mm-hmm. husband to do. So anger is powerlessness.
Hmm.
And you are never powerless.
So remove the illusion that you're powerless, and then the anger can start to dissipate.
So when you go back to your childhood, every child alive wants attention, affection, and acknowledgement. Every child alive. I don't care what religion, I don't care what nationality, that's what children want, right? When you see Ethan, you know, he runs to you. He wants a kiss. He wants a hug. He wants, daddy, play with me. Watch me. Mm-hmm. You know, and he wants you to say, wow, look what you did. So mm-hmm. that's what every child alive wants. Now, if you can't get that, you can't get your parents' attention, or you can't get them to acknowledge you, or you can't get them to play with you and give you you feel powerless. If you can't protect your mother because she's being beaten up by your father, you feel powerless. If your dad's an alcoholic and you can't get him to stop drinking, you feel powerless. So I'm powerless is a very common belief that people have. And if you're powerless, every time you come up against a challenge, it's going to stop you in your tracks. So if you want to know, if you want to know how to, I was letting you track. Mm-hmm. if you want to know how to come up with your beliefs, it is, like you said earlier, logical. And you can ask yourself this question. So the first one is, what do I think or feel before mm-hmm. I'm going to think about doing that? Women will hurt me. If you approach anxiety, you're afraid to walk up to a woman, I'm going to be rejected. Rejected is people have a fear of rejection. Rejection never caused fear in anybody. And I'll do that before we get off. I want to show you how the emotional process works, because it's mm-hmm. so powerful and easy. So, so the second question you ask yourself is, what logically might someone believe that would have them not do that or have them do that? Like, what must I believe? My husband walks in one day and he goes, "There are no bananas." And I went, "Bananas? I had three sessions today. I'm raising two kids. I blah, 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 blah." And he looked at me like, all I said was, "There's no bananas." What I heard was, "You're not a good wife, because if you were a good wife, you'd have bananas, right?"
Got you.
So I went, and he said to me, "Shelley, you got to work on your defensiveness." I said, "You know, I am defensive." So I sat down, I had a couple of sessions, and one of the beliefs was a good wife takes care of her husband. Mm-hmm. And that was one of the beliefs. And I saw my mother's whole life was taking care of my father. That's all she did. and her kids, of course. Mm-hmm. But she didn't work, you know, that she didn't have hobbies. I mean, that was her. So that was my belief. So when that happened, so I got rid of the belief, a good wife takes care of her husband or puts her husband first, or, well, I can't remember the words. Mm-hmm. But when I got rid of that belief and other beliefs like, if you do something wrong, you deserve to be punished. That causes defensiveness. That's why don't punish your children. Please don't punish your children. There's a whole lot of ways to get your kids to cooperate without punishment. Punishment doesn't work. If it did, you'd only have to do it once, and you never have to do it once. And it doesn't work. They don't go, "Oh, I'm learning something really wet." They hate you and they plot revenge. But the belief, I'll tell you, you wanted this is not a funny story, but this is a fascinating story. Morty and I did a research study with incarcerated men, mm-hmm, who were getting out of prison. And two of them, I will never forget as long as I live. So one of them was a wife beater, woman beater. And he had the belief, if you do something wrong, you deserve to be punished. And the way to punish is to beat. Mm-hmm. Obviously, that's what he saw as a kid. Mm-hmm. When he got rid of that belief, he said, I never wanted to beat, but that was the behavior that followed. The other one, Chris, this is in Morty's book. My book is coming out, it's a different book, but Morty's book has this. So Chris shot people. So he never killed anybody, but he shot people. And he came to my house for dinner after he got out of prison. This was a kid, Dan, who couldn't look Morty in the eye. He would like be here and here and here. And by the 10th session, I think we did 15 sessions with them. And by the 10th session, he was like engaged. So he had the belief, if someone gets in your face and razzes you in the hood, and you don't shoot them, you will lose respect. Hmm. Now, of course, that's what his father told him. He gets, mm-hmm, rid of that belief. He says to me, "Shelley, I shot somebody over a $5 bill. And when he came to my house, I said, 'You're such a sweet kid. How could you shoot people?' And he said, 'Because my father told me that.'" He goes to see his father, mm-hmm, in prison, and when he gets out, and his father says to him, "I was wrong. It's not worth it."
But he wouldn't have been able to receive those words had he not gone through the work.
No, because he thought he saw that. You can see a parent say something, but you can't see that it's true.
Well, Shelley, I'm looking forward to going through the course now. Now I can do that. I've had it open on my computer. I've been waiting to have this conversation. I've got it open.
Oh,
on my
I'm so laptop excited.
So we can get into it. Because I did a coaching session with my business coach and came up with my core fear, my core limiting belief, and my core wound. I think it was. Yeah. And so I'm actually going to apply those.
Cool.
And see.
Can you say what the fear is?
I don't remember the order. So okay. The funny thing is I've been pushing down the balloon because what I did was I immediately came up with a positive variant of those and I've been using the positive variant. Anytime I start to see the behaviors come up, I think powerless was one or useless was one. Unloved. I'm powerful, I'm valuable, and I'm lovable.
But there was a fear, you said.
Yeah, but I don't remember which. So powerful is from useless. Lovable is I'm love. I'm powerful, I'm valuable. And so useless. I think it's useless.
Yeah, let me just show you something. If you want to have me back on, I'll do it with you on the air. Mm-hmm. That would be fun. Because I did that with a podcaster. It was hysterical. Oh my God, blew his mind. So here's the emotional process. And then I'm going to give you a link to for everybody to eliminate a belief for free. People call me and they say, I'm afraid of being rejected. And I said, that's so interesting because rejection doesn't cause fear in people. I don't have a fear of rejection. My kids don't have a fear of rejection. Here's what happens. When you're, so you know the Pavlov's dog experiment, right? Good. Everybody knows they showed the dog ring food, the he salivated, they rang the bell, and then they just rang the bell, dog salivated. That's called conditioning. Mm-hmm. Okay, this is the same thing. When you're little, every time rejection is present, because you're being rejected by the people on whom your survival depends, it's the threat to your survival that causes the fear, not the rejection. Hmm. And the only reason you feel fear as a child is because they're both always there at the same time, just like the food and the bell. Hmm. Now, just to make that process, just to make that, sorry, distinction real, everybody close your eyes if you have this. And imagine you're a little kid and I'm your mom, Dan's your dad, we love you unconditionally and you never ever feel rejected by us. And your best friend rejects you. Would you feel fear? No. And if you didn't then, would you today? No. Good. Open your eyes. So that's how you get, so your neocortex just went like this. Wait a minute, the rejection never caused my fear. My fear was always caused by a real or imagined threat to your survival.
Oh, that was really simple.
You could do the same thing with anger. There are people who have anger associated with being told what to do. Every time somebody tells you what to do, they get angry. That tells them what to do, they get angry. Here's again, anger is not, somebody telling you what to do didn't cause your anger. Remember, anger
is powerlessness.
So it was the powerlessness that caused your anger, not being told what to do. Hmm. But every time somebody told you what to do, like your father, there was powerlessness and you felt anger. And the only reason you feel it today is you never distinguished between those two things. So close your eyes one last time and then I'll shut up. Imagine you're a kid and your father tells you what to do and you say, Dad, I don't appreciate when you speak to me that way. I'd like you to ask me. And your dad went, you know, you're right. I will do that next time. The next time somebody told you what to do, would you get angry? And if you didn't then, would you today?
No. Well, I'm going to be playing that back.
Okay, so you want the link?
Yes, please.
Okay, it's eliminatebeliefs.com.
Eliminatebeliefs.com. We'll make sure we pop that in.
And then you can go and you can eliminate. There's three common beliefs to choose from, and you can eliminate one for free.
Awesome, so awesome. Shelley, you're just a delight. Thank you so much for your time today, your energy and your gifts. Looking forward to loads of people jumping on board with this and getting some of these beliefs shifted away. Yeah. Guys, there's lots here to replay and go back over. Make sure you go over to eliminatelimitedbeliefs.com. Any final words for the audience today, for the listener today?
Just remember that you're never a victim. Anytime you feel stuck, know that there is a way to get unstuck, that it isn't the circumstances that are making you feel a certain way, but the meaning you're giving. And if you can just get that the meaning is in your mind, it's not in the events, the emotion will go away.
Amazing, amazing. Shelley, sending you so much love. We will find a way to snoogle and canoodle at some point here soon. We'll make sure we plot that out. Listeners, remember, you can consciously choose a more abundant, joyful, limitless, purpose-driven life, and to keep dreaming with your eyes open. Until next time, bye for now.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of Do It With Dan with your host, Daniel McGenna. For more great content and to stay up to date, visit dmpotv.com. We'll catch you on the next episode of Do It With Dan.